Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to talk to you about backstories, why they are very useful, and why most actors' backstories are completely useless. I'll explain. I was working here in Australia and with some actors on a scene, and the subject of backstory came up, and I've dealt with that many times. I've talked about it on my podcasts, and generally my belief is that it's more of a just kind of an exercise, I think, that really isn't going to net you any great results for the energy generally. And it's because the way the backstory is created and how it's looked at. And I think that beyond a shadow of a doubt, you have to have a backstory when you work on a scene, in the sense of what has brought you to this moment, what has occurred that finds you here in what is certainly going to be some sort of conflict. What is that conflict, and what is it you hope will happen? I mean, this is how we conduct our lives generally, and particularly when we are in situations where there is conflict. And, you know, if we're making movies or doing plays, generally most things, most scenes we work on have something to do with these elements. This particular scene that I had assigned that they were working on is becoming one of my new favorite ones for the variety of different aspects of the scene that allow me to speak to a number of the common kind of foibles and mistakes that actors make when they think of things in an acting sense and just not in a, okay, this is me, I'm dealing with this, and let me just, you know, think about it that way and play heads up ball that way and not worry about trying to be a clever actor with it. To set this up, I should tell you that the scene is from a play written by Neil LaBute, and it's called The Break of Noon. And I think this scene takes place around page 85. And it's between a character named John and a detective. Okay, so this is a story of a fellow who has come into John's work and killed all of John's co-workers with an automatic weapon. Just mowed them all down while John was taking pictures of him doing it. Now, from what I get from this particular segment in the script, I haven't read it. I just have worked on it, and I only focus on these things because I want to see how much information can we extract from this scene, and, you know, what's really important and what actors need to get, because obviously one of the things I train you toward is the ability to go in and do great auditions, and sometimes that entails having to get some material. You don't know what the whole story is, but you're counting on your abilities as a detective of sorts to be able to get in there and look at that scene, two, three scenes, maybe a little bit of FYI that they give you so that you can fill in the blank spots. Otherwise, you've just got to make really good determination. And I'm convinced that if you have even a decent writer, you can generally extrapolate from whatever you get to read probably what is going on. So we have this character, John, and John at work has taken pictures of a fellow, a disgruntled former employee that comes in and mows everyone down. John, as it turns out, as time has passed and this has gone through multiple news cycles and things have been determined, is not being held guilty of anything other than he chose at this moment to take what, you know, seems to be almost glamour shots of the guy mowing people down. He has gotten money for it, which he says he gave most of it away. CNN apparently is doing a documentary. Apparently he's been on Jay Leno. And they've shown these pictures of this guy, you know, I'm assuming looking like Rambo a little bit, probably with, sadly, an AR-15. And he's just mowing all these people down. The scene has to do with the detective questioning John in this very casual way, you know, at his place of work, the detective's place of work, but just in this very casual way, he's trying to find out a few last things. from John after all is said and done. And his preoccupation is, and I think it's a reasonable one, yes, apparently John isn't guilty of anything. But the problem is, A, he survived, which is always suspect. But more importantly, he was able to stand perfectly still and take these, like, glamour shot pictures of the guy while he was mowing all of John's co-workers down. And you see, that really is just, that really just sticks with this detective. The guy is not proven to be guilty. There's nothing he did apparently that was wrong other than the poor judgment, maybe finally, of taking pictures of this guy while he was killing all of his people. Now, there's a number of things, you see, that I think any reasonable person would think. First of all, what would make you want to do that? Why would you want to catalog a mass murderer? Why would that be high up on your scale? What would trigger that in you to make you think that's the thing to do while everyone you know is fleeing for their lives, dying, and in, you know, more than likely, need of help? That's a tricky one, you see? And the premise of this meeting, which I also love, is that, and it, why it's great for exercise, for acting exercise, is that the guy, John, has voluntarily showed up. His lawyer said, you can go there, but you can leave anytime you want. None of this is binding. You're just there talking, you know. But you can leave anytime you want. What I love about that, you see, is that if you have a guy who's coming in who can leave anytime he wants, he's not under any obligation to answer these questions even. He's there on his own accord. He's volunteering. He's trying to help. For the other actor, I think what's fabulous is that you really have to do that thing that you do in life, and that is you got to walk that fine line of not pissing someone off, otherwise it leaves. And I'm always reminding actors of that because, you see, when you have a script, you say, well, no, he's not leaving anywhere. Look, well, you got seven more pages. Where does he think he's going? You know, no, I always jump in and say, hold on a second. If I were here and you just did that to me, I'm going to say bye. Why would I want to stay there? This looks like an ambush. You're scaring me. You look like you're going to beat me up. You know, you're unrelenting. You seem mean. You know, this is a million reasons why I'd leave. I think way more reasons why I'd leave than why I'd stay. So it's up to the actor, you see, the actor, the detective who's trying to keep him there so he can get these answers, you see. It's up to him to figure out a way to contain whatever animosity or frustration he has and really keep that guy there. So this is the basic premise, right? You have John, who has come in for this meeting, who can leave at any time, but he's there to clear some things up. From what I got from the dialogue, well, if he's already been on Jay Leno, if, you know, they're making a documentary, if he was interviewed on 60 Minutes, then we have to assume that this incident happened a while back, right? Yet here John is, willing to clear some questions up a detective has, a detective who we kind of quickly ascertain is someone who can't seem to just let this go. It's really frustrating him. Let's look at why it's frustrating one more time. What kind of a person would not only stand up and take pictures, but would have the, I don't know, the kind of physical, mental, emotional response to be able to hold stock still and take brilliant combat photos of a murderer on a rampage? Why would you think to do that? Why would you do it, you know? How are you so steady? Would you have done this if you didn't know you were going to live through it? I mean, do you have a guarantee? Now, you just think of this, think it through with me, folks. Let's forget about acting. Really, if you just thought of yourself as a detective, and for whatever reason, this guy came up, you know, clean, he gets to go on in his life. If you were a career detective, do you see how that might just bother you a little bit? How you'd feel like maybe somehow he got away with something because it just doesn't add up, right? You know that he said that God had told him to do it. He pulled out the God card. I'm not making any judgments on that. I'm just telling you, from the detective side, I can see where I might label it as such. Oh, God told you to do it. He just whispered into your ear, stand up and take pictures of the fellow who's mowing down all of your people, all of your friends, all of your coworkers, and make sure they're really good. Do you see how that would just really just seem too cockamamie to be true? And can you see how, if you were a career detective, you would really want to sort that out? You'd want to get that thing sorted out. You just can't let it go. Okay, now let's get to what I really want to talk about now that I've set the stage, and that is your backstory. Most people, when they start their backstory, they'll sit down with a pad and paper, or I guess a computer, and they will just, you know, I was born in Cincinnati in 1977. My dad was a mill worker, and I like, you know, potato chips, but not the spicy kind. And one day, my daddy and I went and flew a kite. And, you know, you just start writing stuff. You think that if you can create some sort of tapestry of some sort of background that you yourself will create, you see, it'll be unique to you. And then that'll bring comfort and clarity to you as you and your character. You see, you'll know all these things. You'll have done this homework, and you'll say, yes, now, you know, I have memories, kind of implanted memories, kind of like from the original Blade Runner. And I will just believe that. These things will become a part of my thing, which then will hopefully generate a more, you know, kind of clear reality. I am indeed this person, you see, because I have memories. I have a backstory. And you'll run that backstory up if you're conscientious into kind of, you know, what you do presently and when you got the job at the publishing firm and why you like Sally so much and everything. And you'll go on and you'll go on and you'll go on. Yeah, my first problem with the backstory is that generally what people write in a backstory, it's not playable. If you get better at your acting, it's only because you feel you've done some homework and, you know, you spent some time and then you feel more confident and then your work kind of comes up a bit and you erroneously blame it on your backstory. Just for the busy work of it, just for the stick-to-itiveness of it, just for the thoroughness of your wanting to get things done, yes, for those reasons, but not for what you put on the page. That's just not playable, man. And if you think that it is playable, like it's, you know, kind of gets in your bones, and oh my God, you look like a farm boy. Did you write about cows? You know, that's again, one of these romantic notions that we have. That's not really how it works. So what I ask people, though, is we certainly got to know what has brought us here. And the more clear we can be about that, and specifically with regard to what really drives human beings and not actors to write nice essays about, you know, people they're not, we can come up with stuff that actually helps us just now be able to behave in the scene because we're really clear on all of the right stuff. And so here's an example. Can you imagine what the families of all those people that died would not only be thinking about you for not having done anything other than to glamorize the murderer of their loved ones, but that you would have done it, you would have supposedly gained from it, you've become essentially a celebrity from it. Do you know how often those people would probably contact you? Imagine, where are you living now? Where do you sleep? Just start to think about how society is these days. Do you know how you would be descended upon? I mean, could you go out in public? How do you go out in public? I would imagine you have to wear a hoodie, a hat, sunglasses, and you have to sleep somewhere different all the time. No, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I just want you to really kind of expand on that for a little bit. How do you buy groceries? You don't think people recognize you? And the problem with when they recognize you is you're associated with a satanic, perhaps, you know, Christian lunatic because God told you to take pictures of the murdering man and not do anything to help anyone. Okay, now I want you to think about that a little bit. Because see, we're going to have a reason why you need to be here today. Because the only thing I could think that I would gain from going there would be another chance at trying to exonerate myself, of maybe having this detective say, I question the guy, he's telling the truth, I couldn't find out anything, you know. I mean, if anybody can throw just another little truth log on that fire, you know, maybe that this will eventually go away, but let's look at the alternative. What if you don't show up? That might be misconstrued as you've got something to hide. Finally, after you've got all your money and notoriety, you don't want to talk about it anymore because indeed everyone was, you know, right when they thought that you were. Do you see how we can start to create a situation where you are compelled to be in that room, where you immediately understand what is important to you, and that is to take advantage of this moment again to try and, even in a small way, plead your innocence. So in my backstory idea, it is what truly brought you here. Now, that encompasses the incident, what occurred, what happened afterwards, what people thought of it, what your life has been since, what your life is right now. What do you want? What do you want at this point in your life, in real life? Don't talk acting, in real life. Man, I don't know, to be so exonerated, to be so completely found to be guiltless that I can then just live my life as I did before, but as it is, I have to somehow go where no one knows me because I've been all over the news and I'm associated with some sort of psychotic picture-taking lunatic who doesn't care for his friends', you know, lives. What do you have to do but to go in and not avoid being questioned once again so that you can, you know, even in a small way, clear your name? I suppose you would hope that you could come here, and if you could then convince this guy you're not hiding anything, you did just what the Lord told you, you know, that you're not in cahoots with anyone, this is just what happened, that if he can buy it, yet another one tumbles to the side of truth and belief, and maybe you will somehow get through this. And how do we reconcile that as the person? I think you would. I think the thing that makes it most frustrating for you, I think the thing that makes it most interesting to watch as the audience, is that in the answer to that, you simply say, I don't know. I was there. I thought the Lord was speaking to me. He told me to stand up and take these pictures. It was a feeling. I didn't hear a voice. It was a feeling. And I knew that if I did that, I would be delivered from any sort of violence and that this was my mission at that moment. That's what I thought. I don't know. Maybe I was having an episode. Maybe I was going crazy. Maybe it had nothing to do with the Lord, but I'm telling you, this is what I did. If I could take it back, I would. If I could throw my body at him now and take, you know, bullets just to save people, I would. If I could have picked people up and taken them outside, I would. This is a very strong defense. Because all you're doing is pleading what you knew to be true at the moment, and also having remorse and saying in hindsight, I would have done anything else, obviously, but this is just what happened. Now, what's great about that is that's a good one to plea. I'm not playing some bullshit of, oh, but underneath, you see, I really was in cahoots. It's also interesting for the audience, you see, because without any tip of a card or any breadcrumbs dropped so that we can follow and indeed understand you're just hoodwinking us all, we then get to leave this piece thinking, what really happened? So now when you start the scene, all that stuff that I spoke of that you don't need to write down, you know. You know exactly what's going on there, why you're there, what you hope to gain from being there, why you need that thing. You know what it is you wish for. That way you can deal with A, just intuitively trying to make sure that happens, and B, if it's not happening, know that you can see, leave, and, you know, all of these things just come into play. You know the parameters, you know everything. And for the detective, all of that I just said, but coming from where he is, and that is, it doesn't add up. How are you able to do that? No one can take a still picture like that. And if you could, you need to maybe be in a hospital because there is a wire that isn't connected. You are a brilliant sociopath. You have no empathy. You mentally disconnect from your from what's going on around you, and you're able to do something like this. There is something's rotten in Denmark, man. Now you see, as a detective, I know all of that. I'm positive of that. Why? Because I'm using my common sense. Come on, you guys would agree. That would be crazy. Something's afoot. And if I were a good detective, a career detective, a lifetime detective, I would think, I'm going to crack this nut. No. This is, done that up. I'm going to sort it. Now we have a really great conflict. And everybody knows everything. This is what I'm talking about when I say getting my actors lined up. You see, if we can have this kind of a discussion at the top end of the scene, we can really figure out its foundation, all those things I just said, why we're at this moment, where this is starting, and what is going on, without ever speaking about acting. We're talking about real life events that I want to place and I want to think of in such a common sense, in my life kind of way. Like if this happened to me in my life, if I heard this happening and it happened down the street, it happened at Sandy Hook, whatever, what would I feel? What would my thinkings be? If I can flesh out for both actors, or so then if actors learn to flesh out for themselves, what it is that truly brought them to that moment, not some bullshit, what I ate this morning and I like to wear Izod shirts, not that. What really are the ingredients that finds us here now, and what do we both need to have happen? Which is always going to be a conflict. If we can do that, you see, if I can set my actors up like that, boy, it's like you wind them up and you let them go. That's it. Where does acting come into that? Why do we have to discuss acting? Doesn't that seem like a really fun thing to do? Now, don't some of you want to go out and grab this scene and just take into account what I said and see how that plays out? Of course, that's all you need to know. I mean, I don't know. Let's work and we'll talk about some other things in the scene that are not popping into my head. But what's going to drive 95% of that scene is what we just discussed. And I bet you if I tested you on it, you would remember what I said. So you don't need to write it down, but you do need to go over it. Now, I want you to stop and think about how informed you feel about this scene that you haven't read. I mean, don't you feel this a little viscerally, both sides, the detective and John? When I mean viscerally, I mean, don't you just kind of get it now? Don't you see how that information really now can kind of propel you through the scene? You understand it in a way that is very different from a traditional way that we would approach the material, breaking it down, doing all sorts of nonsense that I'm always mocking. That stuff has nothing to do with the mechanics of this scene. The mechanics of the scene are what we've been discussing. And they are truly what drives an actor. But more importantly, it's what would drive you as a human being. This is what you need to know. All right. I hope that was useful. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Real Life Actor podcasts can be found on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Please tell your friends. And if you're in the Los Angeles area and you'd like to audit one of my classes, send me an email at jeff@reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.